Now, as we know very well, today the curtain comes down on the Beijing Olympic Games 2008. But I think there is one feature of the Games that hasn't received too much attention, and that is the after-race interview. Presumably the athletes, cyclists and so on, have spent just about all their energy on trying to win, rather than on preparing what they will say to the world immediately afterwards. And yet, for them, there is no escaping the after-race interview. If they have won, then the interviewer asks them to sum up your emotions. If they have, quotes, failed to deliver, then a verbal explanation is required, possibly even an apology. Because these people are in the news, then the world demands not only to see what they can achieve, but also to hear what they have to say. And talking is what we do as human beings. Some of us do it because it's our job. Clergy are very good at talking for quite long periods of time. And there are other people too who need professionally to get involved in speaking publicly. But it's not only the famous and the clergy who speak. Even on our personal little stage, what we say makes a difference. Our talking may not be broadcast to the world, but even a private one-to-one or within our small circle, it does have tremendous power. And the book of Proverbs, delivering a great fund of wisdom for living, takes speaking very seriously. By my rough count, Proverbs contains over 70 direct references to our speaking. In fact, no subject is given more coverage in this book than the tongue. And a few of those references are in the passage that we have open in front of us. So as we gather in front of God's word and we have it to read and to study today, may I suggest that we bow our heads for a brief prayer. Lord, may the words of my mouth and the thoughts of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. And this morning, may I suggest that we pledge ourselves over these next minutes to learn how God wants us to use our tongue. Now, I think we begin by, first of all, surveying the damage. I expect nearly all of us have regrets about something we've said in the past. It may have been this morning, or yesterday, or possibly the memory is still there years after we first said it. Or there was an occasion we remember when we wished we had said something and we missed that opportunity and we didn't. And personally, I still go cold when I think of certain things I once said. And I have this experience of feeling, well, if only I could turn the clock back and not say that this time. How does Proverbs describe the damage that our little tongue can do? Well, if you look in chapter 12 and verse 18, you'll see, first of all, that part of the damage is when it pierces like a sword. Verse 18, reckless words pierce like a sword. Because if what we said at the time makes us feel uncomfortable about it, think what it did to the person we were talking to or talking about. It's not described as a glancing blow or the kind of graze that soon disappears. It can really hurt and penetrate. It pierces like a sword. Another verse goes as far as saying, with his mouth the godless destroys his neighbor. And we can all be godless and foolish at times. Now, since we uttered these words that we're not very proud of, we may have had the chance to ask for forgiveness and try and repair the worst of the damage. But it would have been better if we'd never said it at all. By our speech, says Proverbs, we have the power to crush someone, maybe to take away some of their personal self-esteem, their confidence. It doesn't take much when a person underneath the surface is vulnerable, as most of us are underneath the surface. Just a word or two unwisely spoken. So it pierces like a sword, and then it also spreads like wildfire. Some things we say are not contained just within the one person who hears it. We will see how it can happen later, but for the moment, the fire illustration is a vivid and dramatic way of describing how this little tiny spark, a word here or a phrase there, can actually affect such terrible damage. You don't need to turn to all the other verses, but there is another verse that says, "A scoundrel plots evil, and his speech is like a scorching fire." Even watching on television, it's terrifying to watch fires on the scale of those that we saw perhaps a couple of years ago in Greece, or in California or Australia. A blaze close to where we stayed in Spain a few years ago gave us a glimpse of how fiercely they can spread. What we say can, as Proverbs says, stir people up. It can stir up dissension. Just a few words out of place can be a cause of all sorts of trouble. In fact, there's one verse that says it all, and it's important, so I'll just mention where it comes from as well. 18 verse 21, it says, "The tongue has the power of life and death." That it has the power of death tells us it really is that serious. That it has the power of life tells us the tongue really is worth keeping. Our speech, as we will go on to see, is not only for harm, but can also be for good. But in our sort of step-by-step process this morning, having looked first of all at the damage, then we must move on to get a closer look, and secondly, identify the causes. So far, we've kept it quite vague. But we need to ask, where does our speech go wrong specifically? And Proverbs tells us. For example, it tells us it goes wrong when we have a lying tongue. Telling lies is often seen as a rather harmless and rather normal activity. Back in 2002, Max Clifford, one of the best known and most colourful publicists in this country, was quoted in the Times as saying, probably a tongue-in-cheek as well, but he said, "Most of what you read in the papers is lies. And I should know, because a lot of the lies you see in the papers are mine." Now, I think he was trying to be funny, and we need to understand that. But then lies are not much fun when they are said about us. And in Proverbs, there's a list of seven things that the Lord hates, that are detestable to him. And one of those seven things is a lying tongue. Perhaps the most notorious liars of recent times, among those actually found out anyway, were the couple who pretended that the husband died in a canoeing accident in order to be able to get the insurance money. And it wasn't just interesting. It was appalling because here was a mother telling her sons their father was dead. That was a lie. And happily in these days, a lie very few would ever consider acceptable. But while it's very easy to look at other people and see where they go wrong with their lies, we must always look at ourselves. And in the passage in front of us, look at verse 19. "Truthful lips endure forever." This is chapter 12 and verse 19. "Truthful lips endure forever, but a lying tongue lasts only a moment." I think it's saying it takes only a moment to tell a lie. And in fact, telling that lie may promise taking us to safety. But while we may imagine that at the time, it doesn't. It may feel like an easy way to solve an immediate problem, just to say something isn't quite true. But in fact, that small lie creates a bigger problem. Lies dig us into a deeper hole. And they tear down the trust and the honesty on which all good relationships are based. So we want to avoid that, a lying tongue, but also a reckless tongue. Look at verse 18 again. "Reckless words pierce like a sword. Now, we know about reckless driving. Some of you may be reckless drivers. I was once convicted of reckless driving, but it was a very long time ago. I haven't done it since. But what about a reckless tongue? Sure, it's much the same thing. We are reckless when we're too argumentative. In verse 16, in the same tract chapter, it says, we are reckless when we speak too quickly. Do you see a person who speaks in haste? Asked another proverb. And then adds, there is more hope for a fool than for him. A fool shows an annoyance at once, but a prudent man overlooks an insult. You have to be quite disciplined to be able to do that. There is something inside us that somehow can't resist getting the words out. We say too much. We may make a promise too casually, wanting to appear friendly, but then we never actually follow it up. Proverbs gives the example of when we say to somebody who arrives, come back tomorrow. Sounds quite pleasant enough, but actually we know that we should deal with it today. And then, less obvious perhaps, we are reckless when we flatter too much. I heard one person describe flattery as part of our West End culture. Again, it's tempting, we want to please. But Proverbs says, whoever flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his feet. Once we move away from honesty, it always makes the future harder and is not kind in the end. In fact, genuine encouragement becomes much harder to give. So, no to a lying tongue, hopefully no to a reckless tongue. And then thirdly, what about a good gossip? Is there such a thing as a good gossip? Well, being flexible, it depends. It may simply refer to a very relaxed social get-together over coffee and not actually be at somebody else's expense. But Proverbs does weigh in very heavily against real gossip. It says we like it, it's very tasty. As it says in one verse, the words of a gossip are like choice morsels. They go down to a man or a woman's inmost parts. We like being first with new information. And somehow we've got some judging to do here, because there's an important boundary between passing on news about someone, which by saying it actually helps that person we're talking about, but on the other hand, talking about someone in a way that doesn't. Suppose the person we were discussing heard what we were saying about them. Would they be pleased? It's a good question. Would they be pleased or would they be let down? Suppose it was information we were giving to other people that was actually said originally in confidence. What right have we to break it? We need to watch the company we keep, says Proverbs, because a gossip betrays a confidence. So avoid a man who talks too much. Now, foolish use of the tongue is not just a secular activity. It can easily find its way into Christian communities as well. Sometimes it comes even with a so-called spiritual tag attached to it. But if we succumb to gossip, we're simply following the world. Piers Morgan, formerly an editor of the News of the World newspaper, back in April of 2007, he made quite an interesting attack for somebody coming from his part of the world, an attack on areas of his industry, when he said, this media bombardment of hatred and fury and destroying people's lives. And Proverbs tells all of us, not just newspaper editors, it tells people like ourselves, don't go there. Even if in the situation we feel under pressure to say more than is good. I said that Proverbs take it seriously. It says a gossip separates close friends. That's a terrible thing. In one idle, relaxed moment, our tongues can move away from the fear and love of the Lord and damage the lives and the reputation of those we should be protecting. So no to gossip, real gossip. And then thirdly, as we go to the next stage. What do we do next? Well, we begin to lay new foundations. Suppose we just stopped there. I suspect we might go away feeling a little bit guilty and wanting to be more careful in the future. But I would suggest, having looked at Proverbs, we will only succeed if we lay some foundations. There are at least three of these in Proverbs. And notice that none of these three actually involves our tongues directly. That will come later. But all three are crucial to how we speak. First of all, wise listening. That's our first foundation. We get our talking wrong when we don't listen properly. In the New Testament, James gives us advice. He says, be slow to speak, slow to become angry. But the first phrase in the trio is, be quick to listen. And Proverbs says here, if we look at the beginning of chapter 12 and verse 15, certainly the second part of it, a wise man listens. There is a way of listening, it is simply waiting for the other person to finish. But listening is far more than just a lesson in patience. It is wanting to learn. It is what we gain from listening which is all important, both what we learn about the other person and what we learn for ourselves. Let us not be arrogant enough to imagine this person that we're talking to or listening to has nothing to teach us. We're always to be on the lookout for wise advice, however it comes. And that's why verse 15 is a very important one. The way of a fool seems right to him. He's arrogant like that, but a wise man listens to advice. While we are talking, we're so busy doing talking, we're not actually receiving something that would benefit us. It involves listening to criticism. That's always very difficult. And because it's difficult, we can have a habit of rather dismissing advice too easily. But notice what Proverbs says. A rebuke goes deeper into a man of integrity than 100 blows into a fool. I think one of the great advantages of a place like All Souls is the number of different cultures that we have. Now, that's not just nice that we have such a diverse community. It's not just fascinating. We actually need to learn from the strengths of those with other cultural backgrounds. Those of us from the West can benefit so much from those who speak less and listen more. Wise listening, that's one foundation. Let's take the second, a wise heart. This is moving away from the listening ears to the heart. And Jesus said, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. In other words, our words that we speak reflect. They don't just come from here. They actually reflect where our heart is. As Proverbs says, a wise man's heart guards his mouth. And our heart needs to have been immersed in God's teaching in order to say something valuable when we speak. Our hearts need to have been overwhelmed by God's love in order to care for the people we're talking with. That is why we study God's word. It is to take it through our mind, deep into our heart, so that when we speak, that is what comes out. And Proverbs indicates we need a pure heart for our speech to be gracious. And then the third foundation, wise control. Proverbs says in chapter 29, a wise man keeps himself under control. Now, I'm sure a lot of the images, as Melinda was saying a moment ago or at the beginning of the service, a lot of the images of the Olympics will disappear because they would get overtaken by other things. But I still have this image of the world's finest runners on their starting blocks, knowing that the slightest lack of control called a false start, and the runner can well be out of the race. Control is vital. But the word control, when it comes to speaking, can send mixed vibes. Yes, we agree, of course we do. One of the fruits of the Spirit is self-control. But I just wonder, and I'm just surmising here, secretly, perhaps we wonder if it takes the flavor out of talking. If we're too cautious, if we never own up to our own views on anything, if we speak too slowly, if we've already checked a whole list of tongue danger boxes before we allow ourselves to say anything, then we could turn out very safe, but also extremely boring. Isn't it more interesting, we might be thinking, to say things that sometimes we shouldn't say? To begin a sentence without knowing quite how it will finish? People who say things at the wrong time, in the wrong way, to the wrong people, are very entertaining to have around. And why is that? Because they add a bit of spice, a bit of risk, a bit of daring, a bit of honesty to the proceedings. And isn't there a danger we will end up saying nothing at all because we're so careful? Or we are carefully balancing everything we do say so that we always end up in neutral. Well, if you think like that at all, let me tell you that Proverbs has the answers. First of all, it says that its main message is not hold your tongue, like never say anything, clam up. But guard your tongue. He who guards his mouth, says Proverbs, and his tongue, keeps himself from calamity, from messing up. And there's a very good prayer, which we may well use a little bit later on when we finish, but it comes in Psalm 141, verse 3. And this is the prayer, set a guard over my mouth. O Lord, keep watch over the door of my lips. Now, it is about guarding rather than holding your tongue forever. It's also about pausing. Now, pausing before speaking is like anything else in life. Even if it's only for a split second. We don't cross the road, we don't go outside here and cross the road without actually having a good look around. We don't overtake in a car without just having a check in the mirror. Because we are in the habit of doing many things. We know we can cause trouble if we don't do this. And therefore we check to see we're not going to cause an accident. If you know anything about cricket, then you'll know that when a batsman is standing there waiting for somebody to fire a ball down at 90 miles an hour, they actually have a very small split second to choose whether to hit the ball or whether actually it's wiser to let it pass. And that is the case with even the most exciting of players. So it is about pausing first. It's also about timing. A lot of problems are caused by unwisely blurting out something which only if we'd thought about it, we would actually left till later. Proverbs says it's wise to allow tempers to cool. So it's about guarding your tongue, about pausing before we speak briefly. It's about timing. And also just realize that Jesus himself was never dull, but he did have control. There were times when he said the most outrageous things when they needed to be said. But even under the severest provocation, when he needed to say nothing, it says he did not open his mouth. And nor is Proverbs boring, like the advice to pause before being too enthusiastic, before breakfast. It says if a man loudly blesses his neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. So wise control. Now it's time, as we come towards the end, is to actually think about what we are going to say. And fourthly, we're going to go for gold. Once these foundations are in place, listening, heart, control, then we must speak. And the writer of Proverbs has obviously been asked to sum up his emotions, I think, when he says, a word aptly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. That comes in chapter 25. He's totally carried away when he thinks of the value of a word or a phrase to someone who hears it and is grateful. The effect of saying just a short something is out of all proportion to the energy that it takes to say it. So let's take one or two examples. For example, a kind word. If you look in chapter 12 and verse 25, we know this. It's just putting into writing what we already know from our experience. An anxious heart weighs a man down, but a kind word cheers him up. I was talking to somebody the other day who has been in hospital. And the one thing he wanted to tell me about was about one of the other patients who actually came over to him, wasn't just concerned about his own problems, and they were immense, but just wanted to encourage and support this other man who I met. It's the kind word that we're not required to say that means so much. It's when we're actually basically unselfish for a moment. We're not thinking what we need. We're actually thinking of the interests and the needs of the other person. And therefore we speak to them, not patronizing, not gushing, not drawing attention to the person who we are saying it, but just being genuinely thoughtful and kind. Kindness may occasionally lead us to be critical if it's somebody we know well. But even then, any criticism must be wisely given and come from the very best of motives. There are other examples. Are we in a situation where we long that the person knows something of Jesus Christ? Can we think how we can say that? Or there's somebody who remembers to pass on not just all the bad news that we moan about, but actually good news. And again, it says in Proverbs, lips that speak knowledge are a rare jewel. So wise words, if they are wise, are not overdone. They're not copied from somewhere else. They're chosen with this particular person and their situation in mind. So that instead of increasing the pressure on somebody else by what we say that we are relieving them of some of the pressure that they carry. And what's the effect? Well, it brings healing and life, says Proverbs. In fact, when we look at chapter 12, which has been our base for the last 25 minutes or so, we can at last conclude verse 18, reckless words. Yes, they may pierce like a sword, but on the other hand, the tongue of the wise brings healing. It seems that the words we speak can be either or. Like when it says, a deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. But the tongue that brings healing is a tree of life. And you can sense the author searching for illustrations to show how wise words can transform a situation. They can lift, they can reassure a person as much as any material present, however expensive it may be. Pleasant words are a honeycomb, he writes. Sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Now that may be a bit flowery for our kind of language, but we know very well what it means. And as we've thought, stopped and just thought about the whole matter of the tongue, we remember what we said just very early on. The tongue has the power of life and death. Never underestimate the damage that unwise words can do. And never underestimate the sheer gold that wise words can bring. Proverbs, as we've been discovering over the last few weeks, is devoted to teaching us wise and godly living, not just for the special occasion, but day in, day out. But our tongues are also taught by how God has spoken to us. Perhaps you found him always honest, always kind in what he says, always delivering what he has promised, always comforting, always rebuking when we need it, always inviting us to know him, always ready with a word of forgiveness, always gracious. And we may use our tongues for others as a way of saying thank you for all the Lord has spoken to us.